Welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. Take a look behind the curtain of professional hacking and hear compelling discussions with guests from diverse backgrounds who share a common curiosity and passion for challenges and their job. And now, here's your host, offensive security professional, educator, mentor, and author, Philip Wiley.
Hello and welcome to another episode. Today I'm joined by my friend Ricky Allen from CyberOne. Ricky and I have known each other from the cybersecurity community, and it's an honor to be having him on the show today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Fantastic for being here today.
So how is your 2024 starting out?
Man, it's off with a bang so far. It's been fun weather for all of us because it feels like springtime already, and cybersecurity once again is top of the topics.
Yeah, so you guys are getting started off for the year. You had your sales kickoff recently?
We did, just a couple days ago. And the biggest thing we really wanted to bring up there was just, hey, we're in it to win it. And what that means for all of us is same thing for our CISOs, same things for our customers. We all want to really be in there just to show a win versus anything else within the market space today. Because man, all of us are in a little bit of a challenge these days of justifying our needs, figuring out what we have to do these days. And of course, now just helping our team.
So yeah, I'm sure that's a lot more difficult now with the current landscape, companies laying off and having harder times finding budget. So what has that challenge been like for you?
Really, we just saw that, I mean, ransomware is greater than ever. It's more than a $1 billion industry at this point in time, according to all of our great news sources. But what does that mean to all of us? As it continues to get worse, we keep spending more money on it, and we find that where's that balance between the two of spend versus protection really happening? We always use this concept called SecCon within CyberOne, and that just meant what is your own risk level and what are you basically trying to avoid from that attacker? And the average low-tier attackers are just no longer an issue anymore. Regardless of your company, your name brand, or what industry you're in, you're getting very, very advanced attacks towards you, and we all have to adapt to that these days.
Yeah, so before we get too far in, I have what I refer to as having people share their hacker origin story. So if you can kind of share your origin story, how you kind of got started and where you're at today.
Fantastic. I have always been in cybersecurity from before we even could call it that. I mean, it wasn't even information security. So late 90s, I was working for a variety of companies and actually worked for EDS right here as one of my very first jobs when there was nothing else in the Plano area. But we found that, yes, cybersecurity was important, and it was mostly known as access reviews and validation testing. But we have to have a lot more than that. So once I kind of moved into the consulting world and started my first job with Anderson, and with Anderson, we kind of looked around doing IT audits, and what did that really mean? Because once again, it was, what access did we have? What people were doing with it? And very little was a pen test ever thought of. There's no validation testing. We're just like, great, here's a spreadsheet. Here's 12 people with access to it. You checked all their names. We're secure. We're good to go. But immediately now is when the 2000s began. This is where time after time, penetration testing started to grow. And that's where I joined PricewaterhouseCoopers at the time and was on their national core penetration testing team. We got to fly all over the globe doing some really exciting pen tests. And I was excited because, I mean, I think I did the numbers once, and I had a 94% full domain administrator penetration success at that time. And we really got to hire a bunch of people. We got to train them up. That was a really, really fun time at the early days of Black Hat. One joke is we actually were one of four sponsors only at Black Hat, and now look at it today with hundreds and hundreds of them. Past that, of course, where most people take that is there's only so much lifeline in your own penetration testing. It's a tough job to do it and always keep up. So a lot of people switch over to the blue team from the red team here. I took a job with this tiny little startup where I was, I think, the 70th employee there called ArcSight. And ArcSight was just really like, hey, this is the SIEM environment. It was Cisco Mars, it was ArcSight, it was RSA that was kind of the big three in this environment. And it was just the right place at the right time, I think, right when PCI came to play and that said, 10.2 said, thou must buy a SIM. And it was, once again, a very exciting trip. Took that one to a $1.5 billion exit with HP. And then it was very fun to really see and back at the size of HP again. Past that is, we said, how can I keep taking this SIM model globally? I started basically at that point in time with Accenture, kind of coming back to where my roots was, since that was my very first job. That was, once again, great to see how big companies could apply the challenges of SIM. Man, network complexity, the how many logs we could get, how many people could actually see, touch, and respond to those events was really, really challenging and hard. And when you look at a Fortune 10 size organization like that, well, there was still a long way to go. And this is where actually it, theoretically, my competitor back in the SIM days, Rob Davis, pinged me on the shoulder and said, hey, let's start something from new. Let's start something from scratch. And so I was one of the founders of Critical Start at the time, where we really wanted to get down to, let's basically fix this breach issue. Ransomware was just starting up again. Where could we basically do some controls, apply a concept called Defendable Network to honestly stop breaches? This has been a fantastic ride so far with that one, where we developed the whole MDR technology, and we just recently spun off away from them, where now I help create CyberOne Security, and we're at this point back into full consulting, advisory work, AI development skills. It's where I've always wanted to be. It's kind of one of the funnest jobs I've had right now, and we have great, great co-workers. So that's a quick history of me, but we can go back and see the same exact challenges happen time after time. It's still dealing with people, and it's still dealing with the complexity of our networks, and they're not getting any better. Mm-hmm. We thought the cloud would, basically we could see through the clouds and see things far, far better, but it's multiplied the complexity of today's world.
Yeah, it's very interesting mentioning the complexity of today's world, especially coming back from the time you did, because I was starting in IT back in 97. And when you mentioned not a lot of companies having security programs, it was interesting how few companies did. It was like government had security, but most of the time back then, companies I worked for is the network administrators managing the firewall. So it really wasn't a true security team. It may be some people from the risk side of stuff and more the financial risk overseeing some assessment type stuff. But yeah, it's just amazing. And then just the complexity of the things to defend now, it's a lot more difficult. What all the technologies we have and to be able to defend all that now.
It was, and I mean, we always had checklists to do back then. So that was what it was all about, is can we get a checklist to make your unsecure device better? The more checks you could do, of course, the more findings there were, and I mean, help with the Microsoft initiatives when they first were doing patch management back in 2003. We were helping with, all right, how do I secure Cisco environments? How do I secure firewalls? But the out-of-the-box insecurity, unfortunately, was something I think most vendors have figured out. Let's switch that around. Let's actually have a more secure starting approach versus having to have someone go in here and change registry keys left and right, hoping we don't break something after it's been in production so far. And that, I really feel that that's gonna be, as time goes on, we just need to be able to immediately deploy, immediately have something secure. Because without it, unfortunately, we just don't have time to go through and do all the right checks and balances.
Yeah, so how was it transferring, you know, being a pen tester, how was it to move away from pen testing? Was that a difficult challenge for you? Was it mainly for more opportunities, career advancement?
Great question there. When, working at PwC did give me a chance to work in every single section and area, between identity management projects to just full-blown audits all the way to over to penetration testing. And some companies we would go visit, like, hey, this is the fourth year seeing you. Really within the first about 2 or 3 days, we already had domain admin at that point. We're like, yep, broken again. And that was, I guess, very the realistic side why I wanted to go and fix that. It was like, there are better ways. I hate the fact we can keep breaking into the same exact company time and time again. Let's help go out there and help fix that.
Did it get boring for you on the pen test side, always getting domain admin so easily? Did it
I hated that.
Become less of a challenge?
It was. I mean, back in the Code Red days and NIMDA days and things like that. There were some projects, I think my record was during the kickoff call, we actually popped one of their machines, tried Unicode on that one, and from that point, we actually could tell them their passwords during the first kickoff call.
Oh, wow.
And that was like, wow, that was an easy week. But there's always further you can go into it and always those recommendations to make. What I didn't realize, though, is that each and every one of those recommendations took so much time behind the scenes to really test out, make sure they were correct, make sure they were secure. And that was usually the part where you guys were here for 3 weeks to do a pen test, but it took me maybe 10 months to go and correct those things. Mm-hmm. And that's why by the time we came around again, they just finished adding some changes and updates, and we were there testing all over again. We have to be able to squeeze that a little bit tighter, I think.
So how did that background as working as an offensive security professional help kind of mold your defensive career and help you be a better defender?
I hope everyone does this at times. You have to understand the attacker's mindset, understand how I could use this to really explain what your situation was. We've all had an auditor come in and be like, well, this is wrong. Like, well, explain to me how that is. Well, we didn't really exploit it, but just theoretically it could be wrong. That is not a good game changer for any of us, because it's very, very hard to go justify that if it's a theoretical finding. As a pen tester, you can go through and say, well, I've done this, I've proven this, here's what could happen, and here's a great example of that. Your knowledge and explanation of the whole piece is that much better.
Yeah, just having that background, understanding how those exploits work, those risks, how to, you know, protect against those, I'm sure had to help a lot.
It is, and while I'm a little rusty these days, it's still the same steps of footprinting and then really diagnosing, doing exploitation at that point, and then really finding a way to, you know, maintain your presence. All of it still comes down to there's going to be that one pop that you make that's going to be the level that really should have been identified. Just because someone logged in, or that was one piece, but when someone actually launches an exploit, I hope that those defenses were in place to go see that. And that's what I've been doing ever since then, is looking at those defenses.
Yeah, and so as we kind of mentioned, the evolution of technology and how things have gotten more complicated, so how has that complicated the defender's job?
Oh, it's sometimes impossible is the defender's job. We're always keeping up. We're always looking for that next, well, is this need to be patched today or that need to be patched today? I only have so many resources. And unfortunately, in today's world, that time from even potential exploit to exploit release is so fast, we all have to really accelerate our vulnerability management program as fast as we can. Because we thought that, oh, if it's a medium risk, maybe we can wait 90 days for it. Well, between sometimes that release and the exploit being available is now shorter than ever. I'm not sure if the real attacker knew of the exploit beforehand and it just took forever to be announced, or what the real challenge is in today's market, but we're looking at hours now versus days or weeks.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of a pen test I did back in 2015 or 2016. The company I was consulting at the time, and we did a pen test. We had a 90-day retest, and they mitigated or remediated all the findings that were critical, high, and medium. But that 90-day retest, someone figured out between that time how to exploit a low-level vulnerability. So if we hadn't done that retest, it would have been totally overlooked and could have been breached. So it's just amazing how quickly those things are happening, and sometimes that the frequency of the pen testing makes a big difference in making sure you catch those things.
Right, and speaking of how we look at that within a SIM or really security operations center, too much time and focus was always spent on, oh, well, that's a low, I don't have to deal with it. And when you think about the pyramid, a lot of that lower level pyramid just got chopped off. We just don't have time to go look at for lows. But those are our real indicators. Those are the places we need to be looking more often than not. And the fact that there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of potential low risk that were just ignored and by a week by week basis, that's why I think where we had to make those changes to SIM. And that's kind of the idea we had behind creating a managed detection response company, what that's supposed to be doing for you and helping at least bring the noise down to a actionable level to then feed into your SOC program.
And it's interesting on the vulnerabilities, because CISA had a quote that they had out a while back that they were talking about how a lot of these breaches or a lot of these smaller, less critical vulnerabilities chained together to lead up to a breach. So sometimes you can't overlook some of the lower level vulnerabilities because they still could be a risk and used in a breach or exploit.
And who really decides the level of vulnerability? And by working in a SIEM company, I kind of saw that behind the scenes. It's sometimes very subjective. We don't just take directly what the vendor said was a high, medium, or low. Whose choice was it to make that decision either? And between the vendor saying one thing, and the SIEM could actually churn that low into a high or high into a low type thing for you, I kind of lost the trust that says, oh, this is the critical. Well, great. I'm glad it just says action is necessary. It doesn't mean that a critical is sometimes prioritized over a high. And this is kind of this new risk management environment now, which I'm kind of excited about today in 2024, is better tools are now available to now look at my bigger network, figure out either, is it a single user that's causing my problems? Is it their behavior? Or is it a technology that's in place? And can I tie those two portions together to now really bring me true risk versus just what vulnerability scanner said or what a SIEM alert said for my firewall?
So now from a pen tester perspective, internal pen tests have become more difficult with some of the endpoint detection and the SIEMs. So how have those evolved to protect against some of these more advanced threats that we're seeing these days?
It's the same thing we've been trying to do. It's all about validation. I need to really, as I put a control in, I need to validate it. And why starting, if you have a brand new program, yes, understanding what your risks are in first place with a penetration test is helpful. Yet, however, those recommendations sometimes come off by saying, I need an X product or Y product. Where once the actual controls are in, though, that's where the penetration test will change. And that's, of course, where it is harder. I'm, at this point, happy that we don't have as many findings. We tried everything. Here's the point of detection. Here's the point of escalation. It's more time-stamped just to make sure your controls are working. Now, compare this to potentially breach attack simulation, where one type of exploit's tried just to see if your tool set's working. Well, that's still a very technical approach. I think you still need a combination of the two of a attack simulation and a manual understanding of like, that error page wasn't supposed to say that. What can I do with this now? That's never going to be repeated, unfortunately, with a some kind of a just exploit tool.
Yeah, that you mentioned breach attack simulation. So what do you think about that whole area of breach attack simulation and purple teaming?
It all really, we should just call it validation testing. And this is where it should be a multi-phased approach to it. Because yes, a BAS tool set's fantastic. That's what we should be using just to make sure that was my firewall set up right? Does it actually go through the network? Does my endpoint find that right? And do all those now report up to my SIEM? Great, there's a win. I'm more worried about that false negative of I bought all these tools. I bought $10 million worth of products. So those actually work properly? Are they in a cohesion? Do they actually talk to each other and I can see what's going on? That's the validation side that we need. Beyond it, we still need a purple team because that's almost like a pre-IR. It's what does your SOC do when you actually see something bad? Military trains this exact way. I mean, train for failure, train for something that could happen. And that is unfortunately not happening across the whole industry today. We're all too busy thinking about just the daily alerts that are coming up versus saying, well, let's really test and practice for a breach. And unfortunately, I mean, through SEC requirements now, we all have to be doing that now, just disclosure-wise, but I'm still not seeing a really, really strong testing from start to finish quite yet.
Yeah, I think it's a good addition because it's kind of nice too with some of these BAS platforms. It makes it easier for folks that are a little more junior level to be able to perform those tasks, instead of just going through manually executing the tools. So sometimes it seems to simplify that process.
Right, and a great area is range simulators. And so if you can have more of a cyber range concept, which gives me the chance in my lower tier teams to go through and say, you know what, go to an access point or a switch or a firewall that could be in a different language or someplace in South America or maybe in your own backyard. go make those changes to it if you have to. Understand the effort and the time that it may take to go and make that correction, because that's usually where the failure is all the way down at that lower level of, can I get the right person on the phone? Can I tell them to go block a port or turn off some kind of switch networking? We just never thought that far down to it. And so therefore, you have to really shut the whole network down versus cutting off those compromised areas.
It's interesting you mentioned the cyber range. When I used to work for a bank, we used to have these CDX exercises, like red team, blue team. But the interesting thing was, is each team attacked and defended. So you had these systems that you had to protect, as well as trying to hack the other team's systems. So that was kind of an interesting exercise. And I've seen some other companies do that, have those exercises that they get together with other companies to practice attacking and defending.
That is fun. And I mean, we see that with a lot of our hacker associations, I mean, even DHA that you're involved with, and I've been involved with that one for over a decade now. Mm-hmm. But that was always the fun. I mean, I think the fun of just CTF anymore is, it's tough, because how do I do the very initial CTFs? How can I go, you know, the old Acme Bank concept where I can first learn about web application testing? That's not used as much as it used to be anymore. And that's really where the fun was. I'm excited. I mean, I'm a part of the South Texas ISSA team, and we have a great mentorship program. And it's neat connecting with those college juniors and seniors to really find out what they're doing. And it blows me out of the water of the stuff that they're playing with and testing and doing all that background tests and such. And I'm excited about the next generation coming in. But often they say, well, where can I get a job? I'm like, well, that's the hard part, is there's just not a huge flow of the net new jobs. Mm-hmm. I would love for all of them to start in a blue team, all of them to start either at a help desk, understand who your audience is, and before you start making those recommendations against them.
Yeah, so since you kind of mentioned that, what would you recommend for someone as far as to help their chances? Say you've got your degree or whatever and you're looking for a job, what are some opportunities for folks to improve their chances of getting a job?
Right, and regardless of your level, you kind of have to be a hacker at heart. One of my questions is, tell me about your home lab. I mean, what have you set up? What do you run? What are your, I mean, are you a technologist at heart to do those things? And some people have some pretty advanced setups, but at least it gives them the chance to say, I know what it's like to set up a machine and make a change to it or apply a patch to it. It's sometimes quite complicated, so it's not as easy as you think it would be. The other thing I really recommend is, like, where's that baseline level? I feel that everyone out of college should have taken or is taking a Security Plus. That's a great intro. It touches upon a lot of different areas, and I mean, it's as cheap as a $10 book at this point in time, but it shows the initiative that you went out and did that versus any of your other peers.
So how important it is to be networking with people?
Oh yes, networking then. And it's been a challenge, because we sometimes would always have conference after conference. Student passes are free. It just takes that effort to, hey, just dress up, go to it, learn, just sit around the people, talk to the vendors, understand what products they are. Go home and Google as much as you can and figure out what all these vendors are. And that's a great understanding of just, okay, here's products, here's type solutions, here's the challenges that I heard at this conference and some leading technology. That is what we're asking for. So get out there. You might have to miss a class or two, but that's gonna be far, far more valuable. Get started, of course, with your local ISSA chapters or ISACA chapters. You can dive deep in certain areas, like the Cloud Security Alliance is a great one too, to learn new concepts. And as I mentioned, show off some of those skills. Take the time now to get trained, take that certification. Sometimes they're not that cheap, but a $395 certification, it's totally worth it. Because today, and I wish I had it like they do today, there's so much training available for so cheap, with very, very articulate guidelines I can take at 2 a.m. I mean, when you and I were taking our CSSP courses, I mean, I took mine, I think, in 2001. There was no all-in-one book. There was a library of, like, book after book I had to go by, reading Bruce Schneider's cryptography books. I'm like, what is this going to have anything to do with the test? But there was a lot to learn at that level. And I think it's great now that people can kind of accelerate through it.
Yeah, because some of the practice questions you had, like CC Cure was one of them, because I went through mine in 2002. CCCure.org was one of the sites. Sean Harris's book had just come out. The Crutz book was like the one I went through, that one of the exam crams, and studied that going through the CISSP. But like you mentioned, all the learning content, especially when it comes to the offensive security side, because back when I became a pen tester in 2012, you had the OSCP, which fortunately I was working in security and could afford it. But you take someone that's a fresh college grad, you know, a couple thousand bucks for a course is kind of a little bit too expensive. And now you find things out there, learning content that's a lot less expensive.
Yeah, and know that there always will be advanced level certifications that you would have to deal with. But right now, what I'm looking for as a hiring type manager is, did you at least take the initiative? Can you prove that you can learn on your own? Because that's all we're going to get in the corporate world today. Everything that you're learning now is mostly CBT based. We don't have the chance to go sit through full-time, you know, week-long boot camps that cost, you know, $3,000 to $5,000. I mean, those are more of the rarity. And if you just depend on that 1 week, well, that's not going to do much for you, unfortunately. So prove that you can train yourself, that you can learn on your own, and that you're always that hunger. I think that's what brought us mostly to this space today, is you're never going to stop learning. There's always something new. There's more than any human can ever absorb in this space now. And even if you specialize, it's going to be like that too. So we always be looking for that educational piece, always looking to get better. Because in this job, if you ever stop and just kind of say, well, I'm going to pause here for a second, then technology quickly surpasses you.
Yeah, and it seems like folks really need to keep up with some of the newer technologies, because people like myself start out in pen testing before cloud really took off, and now all of a sudden cloud is so popular, and then a lot of folks hadn't updated those skills. So it seems like some cases, if people get some of those more popular technologies under their belt, learn cloud, not necessarily cloud pen testing, it would seem to go a long ways in their career.
Yes, and bringing up cloud as a concept here, well, what should we know? What should be that baseline of today's knowledge across anyone within cybersecurity or really working in this space of IT? We have to, you know, change our vocabulary. We have to figure out, okay, what's called, I mean, what a network is in AWS is not the same thing in Azure. And all these different languages has really caused the most confusion. So this is where their free training courses, GCP, Azure, and AWS, are all available. And that's really the first step is, this is what we call our own internal base firewall. This is what we call our segmentation. And you can pick those keywords out, so you're now in the same language as those that are working with. We've saw this, I think, I was one of the original beta testers of AppScan when we first started doing web application testing, and maybe that was kind of a 2003 type era. Well, why couldn't we ever get those changes to happen? Because the security team or the auditor never could articulate how to go and fix that problem, because you would actually have to go update Java code or some kind of back-end application. And usually the recommendation just said, well, go fix that. Well, how do I explain what it was? How do I recreate it? How do I really understand that the best way? Fast forward to today, we're in that same boat with cloud. Mm-hmm. Most of the people doing the assessments don't know how to make a clear recommendation. And without a clear recommendation, nothing is really going to get fixed, unfortunately.
So AppScan, was that when it was WatchFire AppScan or before?
Way before. Like, it was, we had the beta version where you still had to have a proxy in place. Yeah. And have another machine set up, and you scan one versus the other, and would just give you basically OWASP top 10, even before the OWASP even existed then.
Yeah, because I remember whenever I started using it was about 2005, and it was WatchFire then. And I remember then it was OWASP or the Web Application Security Consortium was kind of a competitor to OWASP. And I remember, I don't know if you remember the sales guy, you may remember him from AppScan, it's Dominic Nalland.
Oh, that was a long time ago, though.
Okay. No. Yeah. Some folks I ran into remember Dominic. He was our sales guy where we got our AppScan from. So that's kind of where I got into AppSec, and that got me interested in pen testing. And so that's what got me interested, and I moved over to pen testing.
Yes. So I think the must-haves, though, you're thinking about is, well, do we have an application? And not just the externally facing ones, but I really need to be looking internally as well. Do we at least know what we've described as right and wrong in that space, saying, you know, don't do this, you should do this, here's the way we're expecting for it to happen. And let's just go and test. And even to this day, the amount of true testing of internally built applications is quite low. They're just like, oh, what's the risk of that? What's gonna happen? And it's still tied in, and that's where the special sauce lives, is our customer data or our ordering data is gonna be in some internal application like that. And just because you can do a pen test and get domain admin doesn't mean you're really getting into where the application layer. And that's what needs to be protected, that needs to be looked at. And today, we just can't do that even. We don't have enough resources to pull those logs in. We don't know what we're looking for. The alerts don't make sense, and we're not testing it very well. So it still is that weird Achilles heel, dark area of cybersecurity that's just not looked at the way it should be.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned domain admin. Sometimes people get too caught up on that, opposed to actually getting the crown jewels, you know, because sometimes you may not have to be domain admin to get access to the sensitive information.
True. Or you are that, and they're like, great, everything else is segmented off. That's where our real stuff is over here. So, yes.
So just to kind of go back a little bit at Cyber One, so what all kind of services do you guys offer there?
Sure. Where we found that where services should be offered and where we can kind of get the best engagement with our customers is still, let's make that forward-looking statement. Let's actually help plan with you. Let's see where you should be and at least kind of figure out that gap assessment to begin. And there's always going to be some kind of gap, but it's where your controls expect to be, where your risk level acceptance is, and of course who that attacker is for you. And that's going to help drive what products do I need, what should I be looking at, where really are the definition of our assets and our keys to the kingdom. So that's gonna be our very first step typically as a consulting company to come into this. And where we really find our biggest infiltrator of any kind of other vendors is, how does a combination of a service to put something in and a product these days work together? Because no longer can it just be, hey, go patch that, go secure that. A recommendation really needs to be along. Here's the exact way to actually set up configuration. Here's the level of logging that you need. Here's the response that you need. And going through that full life cycle is important. So we've built a advisory side to this to basically help your strategy and be where your goals are gonna be set up. Gonna set up a multi-year plan. And then we typically go into, right, let's look at your technical controls. Our penetration testing team is called Team Aries, and that's a dedicated team that's only doing that, presented at Black Hat several times, and performs trainings really across the country. But we found that, all right, great, now we actually have a baseline and a mark of, here's your true findings, let's go fix that. We have a cloud security team. We also have a network security team to wrap all around that to say, what's the right level of segmentation? What can we do network-wise to make your networks at least understand this the most? There's a long way to go, I think, with networking. We've understood zero trust and ZTNA concepts, but yet to fully apply them the way they should be. And that's where kind of we're helping with. And our cloud team itself is very, very focused on the biggest advancement I've seen in security today is Microsoft's movement and acquisition of the marketplace. It's amazing to see one vendor move that quickly against those established products that have been out there for decades. And most of our customers are asking, well, what do I really have in this? And how can it be used? And how does it compare to the other products that I may have already had? And this consolidation story is exactly where we have some plans around.
Very cool. So we're getting down towards the end of the episode. Is there any comments or anything you'd like to share?
Comments, I mean, I'm thinking right now it's still in a way the beginning of 2024. So I'm trying to look outwards and say, what are those biggest plans? What are we working on? What are the initiatives that most of listeners actually will be doing this year? And I think that we can just say 100% of anyone else out there is going to say, what is this impact of AI to us? And it's moving so quickly that developers and the shadow AI terminology is happening now. My biggest recommendation there is think the governance path. I mean, how can we apply governance just through policies, procedures, understanding, ownership, what should we be doing? What data is actually being released in that area? And what are we doing and getting from that data? So this has been a great conversational piece for nearly every one of our customers these days. And so I'm really excited about how, like any new technology, it jumps out there, it moves fast, but cybersecurity really should put the brakes and accelerators on it, help contain it, and then of course figure out how we can best use it for our own companies.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you taking time today.
You bet.
It's an honor to have you on the show. Thanks everyone. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to The Philip Wiley Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, to learn more about Philip, go to thehackermaker.com and connect with him on LinkedIn and Twitter at Philip Wiley. Until next time.